This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Many of the authors you hear interviewed on radio and TV are on book tours funded by their publisher to help promote the book. But when syndicated cartoonist Dan Peraro wanted to go on a book tour to let people know about his latest collection of cartoons, his publisher thought his meager sales could never justify a book tour. So Peraro launched a do-it-yourself tour. He traveled around doing readings in the cities where he was able to find fans willing to fly him out and put him up. Peraro is the creator of Bizarro, a surreal comic that is syndicated to newspapers. His new book is a memoir about his first do-it-yourself book tour. It's called Bizarro Among the Savages, a relatively famous guy's experiences on the road with and in the homes of strangers. Dan Peraro told me he came up with the book tour idea after he got email and started communicating with his fans.
I was putting my email address in my cartoon every day, and I was getting anywhere from, well, like 30 to 50 emails a day from readers all over the country. And so many of them had said, you know, if you're ever in town, come, but we'd love to have you over the house. Or, you know, we'd love to buy you lunch if you're ever in San Diego or whatever, you know, this kind of stuff. So when I thought to publicize the thing, I thought, you know, this would be cool. I could go do a little book tour thing, go around to some of the cities, and, you know, I could actually drop in on some of these people, or, you know, ask them if, hey, you know, take them up on their offer and go over and have dinner with them or whatever. And it might be fun to, you know, a little bit of a publicity gimmick, you know. So I asked my, I asked the publisher to set, you know, if they would be interested in sending me. And they said, well, do you have any idea what it would cost to, you know, how many books you'd have to sell? How many $6.95 cartoon books you'd have to sell to fund a trip like that all around these different cities? I said, well, yeah, but, you know, is money really the bottom line? And they said, yeah, what country are you from? This is America. So there was no money for it. So then I got to thinking, I have this next-door neighbor who, he's a business traveler. He travels so much, and he's got so many of these frequent flyer miles that he gives them away for Christmas. He'll give plane tickets away for Christmas. And I thought, you know, there's got to be just thousands of these guys out there, people that travel all the time. So maybe I could actually get some free plane tickets also and just fund the whole thing. So that was what just boom. It just, I just got the idea. Well, what could it hurt? I'll write this sort of brazen, comical letter begging people to give me plane tickets and pick me up at the airport and drive me around and let me stay at their house and feed me. And I'll just see what happens. The worst that can happen is nothing.
Well, why don't you read us an excerpt of the letter that you emailed your fans?
All right. My new book, Bizarro Number 9, will be appearing in stores in the very near future. I'd very much like to take this opportunity to visit as many bizarro cities as possible, sign books, kiss hands, shake babies, make speeches, and meet as many of my readers as I can tolerate. That's why I'm proud to announce the nationwide 1995 Bizarro Lap of Luxury book tour, but I need your help. If you would like to donate a plane ticket, pick me up at the airport, drive me to a book signing, act as personal bodyguard during said signing, put me up for a night at your house, feed me dinner, drag me to parties, or any one or combination of the above, let me know ASAP, and I will send you details on how to apply. At this moment, you may be saying, it sounds like fun, Dan, but what if you turn out to be a chain-smoking egomaniac who teases my dog and scares the children? How do I know I really want to get involved in this revolutionary public relations gimmick and maybe end up with my picture in People magazine with my arm around your shoulder? Well, that's a fair question, and one I could very well ask of you, too. But let me assure you that while I am visually unusual and an avid nonconformist, I am an exceptionally polite house guest who has excellent hygiene, does not drink to excess, does not smoke, does not use illegal drugs of any kind, and is invariably loved by animals, children, and the elderly alike.
So, Dan, what kind of responses did you get to your email?
Well, I sent a letter out to Los Angeles and San Francisco to a bunch of readers there, and within 30 minutes, I had more offers. I had 40, 50, 60 offers. It was unbelievable. It was more than I could possibly use.
So did you audition people?
Sort of, yeah. I had no plan of how I was going to handle this. I was completely disorganized, as many artists are. So I thought, oh gosh, what do I do now? So I wrote another letter, another basic form letter saying, you know, I got a lot of offers. So here's what I need you to do. You know, tell me about yourself, tell me about the place I'd be staying, where I'm going, what you're offering, how much, how little, you know, sell me. Because I said I can't possibly accept them all. So then I started getting some very interesting letters of people trying to sell me on coming, you know, on choosing them.
Like what?
Oh, I don't know. There was this one woman in Berkeley, I guess, who wrote to me and said, she told me this big long thing. She explained this game that she plays at parties. She says, I'll throw a big party for you with all my friends. And when we're at this party, we always try to break the chandelier in the dining room with this big beach ball that we kick around. So far, I still think it's indestructible. And she just goes through this whole big long thing. And then at the end, she goes, plus, I'm a lesbian, so I'll be no competition for your wife. And I just thought the whole thing was hysterical, so I picked her immediately. And We did, in fact, have that party, and we did try to break the chandelier, and we never did do it.
What were your secret fears? I mean, you write in the book that you have this lifelong fear of strangers, but here you are setting yourself to be in the homes of strangers, to be dependent on strangers.
Yeah, no, it was pretty stupid. I honestly didn't think of it that way. I just thought, gosh, I was that short-sighted. I thought of it one step at a time. I thought, gee, I'd like to go publicize this book a bit. Oh, they won't send me. Well, gee, maybe some of these people will send me. Oh, well, gosh, they are. Well, now I'll just pick some. Well, now, and then once it got down to all the arrangements being set and I was ready to go, and I thought, oh, my God, what am I doing? I had a real panic attack. And I started wondering, I just didn't want to be the one to discover the nation's next Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah, it's funny, you write, I'll have to use other people's bathrooms. They'll see me with wet hair. What if I accidentally leave a pair of underpants under someone's bed? What if pictures of me in the shower suddenly appear on the internet? These are all, I think, rational fears.
yeah, that was more rational than the Dahmer part. But yeah, that was it. It's just suddenly I thought, oh my gosh, just day to day. And I was with two and three different strangers every single day and always at someone's mercy and using all these, using what amounted to strange bathrooms every single day, everywhere I went and the showers. And yeah, it was very weird. It turned out, to be a lot less stressful than I thought it would.
But, you do have a very funny cartoon about your fears, too. It's a cartoon where you've just arrived into town with your suitcases, and your host is a survivalist who's, carrying a machine gun and wearing camouflage with a T-shirt that says, give me liberty or give you death. Would you read what else he's saying?
The big, gigantic, building-sized military survivalist guy says, the toilet's out behind a munitions shed, and there's plenty of field rations in the kitchen if you're hungry. Make yourself to home. If you need anything, I'll be out in the woods shooting at life-size cutouts of the president.
Did you meet anyone as scary as that?
Nobody exactly like that, of course. There was a guy I call Ken the Wacko who was pretty scary. He was in San Francisco, but he wasn't a survivalist at all.
Well, he was the guy, I think, who when you finally met him and were on your way to his house, he confessed he'd never read any of your comics.
Yeah, he had no idea who I was.
So what was the point? How did he manage
to... That's exactly it. I said, oh, really? Yeah, I mean, he was staring at me the way Carl Sagan must have stared at the cosmos for decades. He was just like staring a hole through me all the time and saying very little, and he was making me uncomfortable, just his presence alone. Then he says, in that store at the book signing, it was very strange seeing all those people make a fuss over you because to me, you're just another person. I've never even seen your work. And my head is just spinning. I'm thinking, what? I said, oh, really? So we got to talking. I said, how did you come to invite me to stay? How did you get my letter? I took it off a friend's computer at work. I didn't know what it was, but I just thought I would offer and see what would happen. I said, oh, man. He goes, yeah, I was really surprised when you called and accepted my offer. And he did sound surprised, too, was the weird thing. I remembered back to the phone call.
So were you sorry that you were in his hands?
Well, I was, yeah. I started to get very nervous because by this time I was already completely in his hands and there was little I could do other than jump up and run. And I said, oh, well, at least I know where I stand with you. And he goes, yes, that will make my plans more interesting. I said, what plans? He says, it'll be more fun if you have to wait to find out. Oh, geez, it was like an evening with the Addams Family or something, this guy.
So did he have any bizarre plans for you?
Well, I guess you'll just have to read the book and find out, won't you?
No, go ahead.
I learned that trick giving book reports in elementary school.
That's right. If you want to find out what happened,
yes. Everybody would get up and do the book report, and they tell the whole story, and then they say, "If you want to know whether or not Old Yellow dies, you'll have to read the book." And they sit down.
Now you've given a name to an experience that I think everyone who's ever done a bookstore reading, with the exception of people like Howard Stern and Colin Powell, has experienced, and that is, you show up and no one knows that you're really coming. There's very few people there. You've called this the forced celebrity backfire.
Yes.
To describe what this phenomenon is.
Well, that's when someone presents you as a celebrity in front of a person or a group of people who have no idea who you are, and there's just nothing more humiliating. And it happens when you sign up to do a book signing and you sit down at, you know, you arrive at the place and there's you know, no customers, or there's just no one around, or there's people just staring at you and walking away. And you just feel, you know, here you are with this big shrine around you, meet the celebrity, and nobody, clearly no one has any idea who you are, and you just feel like a schmuck. And the other one is that commonly happens is when I'll be with a friend somewhere and they'll run into somebody they know. And they'll want to introduce me as their cartoonist friend. They'll go, hey, do you read the comics in the newspaper? And I'll say, no. Well, do you ever read Bizarro? No, I've never seen it. Oh, well, this is Dan Perlow. This is the guy that does it. Oh. Well, nice to meet you. You know, and then you're staying there like this big phony nothing. It's a horrible feeling.
Consequently made to look even smaller than life.
Yes.
Now, were you ever worried about disappointing fans? You know, because you're hoping, right, that you're going to be like a real hero in the eyes of your fans. And you show up, they're putting you up at their houses, and you're just yourself. You are who you are. And when you're, you know, when you're waking up in the morning in their house, you're not going to look like much of a hero, probably.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't know. I didn't think about that too much because no one takes their celebrity less seriously than I do. And I always call myself a pseudo-celebrity or a, what is the other thing? I don't even remember now. It's just not something that I do much. I'm not a movie star or TV star, so people almost never recognize me. Somebody will occasionally recognize my name. So I just don't feel like any kind of a hero or celebrity, and I don't buy into that at all. So I figured all I had to be was just, you know, friendly and amusing and that sort of thing. And I did feel some pressure to entertain people because, of course, that's the whole reason they went to the trouble to have me come to their house was, you know, so that they could whatever, you know, just be entertained or have some story to tell someone later. And on the very first leg of the trip, I came down with this horrible laryngitis, which is completely unusual for me. I'm almost never ill in any way. And I just totally lost my voice. So there I was, a mime on tour. That was horrible, just going from one stranger's car to another and trying to get to know people without being able to speak. And some of them were visibly disappointed as well, but they all felt sorry for me. I mean, they could see that I tried. I mean, I tried to talk, and that's part of what shot my voice out even faster. I was completely mute for probably 2-3 days.
My guest is Dan Perlow, creator of the syndicated comic Bizarro. His new memoir about his book tour is called Bizarro Among the Savages. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Dan Perlow, and he does the syndicated newspaper cartoon Bizarro. There are several books of Bizarro comics, and now he has a new book called Bizarro Among the Savages, which is about his book tour in which he stayed in many cities in the homes of his fans. One bitter irony that emerges at the end of your tour is, you know, at the end of the tour, you realize that you have a growing public, you have really adoring fans, but your marriage was falling. Your marriage kind of fell apart. And you learned that lesson that always sounds really corny, but that apparently is really true, that you can have a lot of fans who adore you, but it's not like the love in your own family.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. It was just the ancient sort of philosophy that you know, no amount of money or success can buy you happiness. You know, it really starts at home somewhere. The Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz situation. If you can't find it in your own backyard, you probably never lost it anyway, or whatever it is she says at that in the end of that. And it's entirely true. I had found. When the marriage breaking up was what stopped the book tour, I had a couple of more cities planned when I found out the marriage was falling apart, and I just canceled everything, and it suddenly was such a whiplash. Suddenly, nothing about my career, none of the success, none of the publicity, nothing made any difference to me at all. You know, it just made nothing. It made no sense at all. Compared to what I was losing at home with the family breaking up, and it was a painful but valuable lesson. A lot of people assume that when they hear that this happened, they always say, "Gee, did the marriage break up because you were gone so much on your book tour?" And it's That's not at all. I mean, that's not at all how it happened, of course. I was not gone all that often. But it just happened to coincide, I think.
Was it hard? I think this was the first time that calamity struck in your personal life during your career as a cartoonist. Was it hard to churn out comics while you were going through a really miserable period?
Oh, geez, it was impossible. I was so completely miserable, and my brain just would not stop thinking about the divorce and all the things that had happened. And then every day I just sit down and try to be funny. I mean, it was really like someone just, you know, putting a gun in your mouth and saying, you know, make me laugh. It was a terrible pressure to be under, and I really wished that I mean, every single day I wished I was an accountant or something where I could just go to work and push some buttons and go home and not think about, not have to be creative.
Did you come up with any comics that related to your situation?
I ended up coming up with quite a few. That was one of my many methods of therapy for myself to get over it. I came up with a lot of comics. And at one point, my ex-wife called. She was working in this restaurant. She called and she goes, I saw your comic today and I didn't think it was funny. I hope the whole world, you know, and she just really lambasted me. And I said, well, you know, I don't look at them. What can I tell you? I'm doing this, you know, these jokes. I write these things for myself. They're not aimed at you. They weren't necessarily specifically derogatory toward her either. They were just jokes about divorce, you know. And I said, look, I said, don't read them. She goes, I can't help it. All my friends show them to me. I won't get new friends.
So what was, give us an example of one of the divorce-oriented comics.
Well, one of the ones which I'm not sure I can remember it. I'm trying to remember it. I was going to a divorce support group, which I highly recommend to anybody going through any tragedy. I guarantee there's a support group out there for you know, no matter what you're going through, there's one out there for you. And I think they're really good. But I was going to a divorce support group. And so I drew a cartoon of myself in the divorce support group. And the character, of course, most people didn't know it was me because they don't know what I look like. But the character is sitting in a circle of people and he's saying, I've been using my spare time to invent a time machine. I want to go back in time 16 years and kidnap myself from my own wedding. And that was, I think actually that was the one she so strongly objected to. She called me and got pretty angry about it.
Was this the first time that you were doing comics that really came more out of your life?
Yeah. And it's probably still, my cartoons tend to be pretty surreal. And they really don't deal with things that can actually happen to people. Although I've had a lot of fans come to me and say, you know, this, what I love about your cartoons is that they're completely off the wall and totally unreal, but they remind me of real things that really happen. And I think that's kind of a key, too. That was part of how I was able to incorporate this. But I don't typically incorporate literal events into my cartoons at all. But there is, you know, if you stand back and look at life at all, it can be incredibly surreal. So there's plenty of surrealism in the real world to draw from.
So are you going to go on a book tour for your new book about your book tour?
Yeah, the book about the book tour. I am doing some cities. I'm not doing it the same way.
You're not doing it in the homes of fans anymore?
Right. Although when I go to the cities, a lot of the people that I talked to or that I stayed with when I went the first time have invited me back and these kind of things, and I've kept in contact with a few of them. They've become kind of friends. In fact, I'm going next week to, in a week or so to Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, to stay with some people that I stayed with the first time who are in the book. And they've become actually very close friends of mine. I've been three times now to their house. and we really hit it off and just made, I think, probably a permanent friendship.
Well, Dan Ferraro, thank you very much for talking with us. And may I say, good luck with your book tour.
Well, thank you very much.
Dan Ferraro is the creator of the syndicated newspaper comic Bizarro. His new memoir about his book tour is called Bizarro Among the Savages.